I hadn't anticipated such a large room, so if at any time, if you can't see some of the slides or figures all that well, please feel free to move closer to the front if convenient. And today I'm going to be presenting data that we've observed at a particular field site in Iowa, a project being held by Iowa State University. I'm going to be showing data on field water budget and some tile drain water quality for a project called Comparison of Biofuel Cropping Systems, which is also looking at above ground biomass production, carbon sequestration, and greenhouse gas emissions, which if you're also interested, particularly in soil surface CO2 efflux, then I invite you to come down to poster 1111 at 4 o'clock as I present some of those data. But before I get started, I'd like to thank our funding sources, that of ConocoPhillips Company, the Leopold Center for Sustainable Agriculture, and the College of Agriculture and Life Sciences at Iowa State University. I'd also like to thank Dr. Tom Sauer, Toby Ewing, Matt Liebman, Mike Thompson, Rick Cruz, and Jia Bojo for their scientific assistance and also technical assistance from Carl Pedersen, Jennifer Ritter, and Colton Meyer. So as we've probably all heard several times throughout our meeting so far and the symposium likely, some of the goals of cellulose feedstock production systems for providing feedstock for the ethanol industry is first produce high quantities of above ground biomass production, but then also to do it for systems that are cost effective in their management. And so our most likely systems that we'll have are those that are currently existing or easy to put in place, such as perennials or harvesting the stover from current corn production systems. But we need to do so in a way that is sustainable, not only in producing long-term high yields of biomass, but being sustainable in an environmental sense with water quality, which I'll be focusing mostly on today. So the objectives of the study was to evaluate some components of the field water budget along with tile drain, nitrate, and phosphate loads and some tile drainage flow dynamics. Those total amount of loads coming out of the system are important, but some of the flow dynamics for individual drainage events can also give evidence to how those systems may impact the environment. Our cropping systems of choice were that of the traditional corn and soybean rotations managed for grain harvest, and also continuous corn production systems with and without a winter cover crop, in which approximately 50% of the estimated stover was removed, was harvested along with the grain. And then we also had mixed perennial, reconstructed mixed perennial prairie systems, both fertilized and unfertilized, where the fertilized systems received 75 pounds of nitrogen per acre at the beginning of the year. Our field site has a relatively flat topography with slopes generally less than 1% over the site. Plot dimensions are 27 by 61 meters. And the plots were hydraulically separated from one another with border tiles, but had a sample tile in the middle of each plot running to a sampling sump to obtain water samples. And each of the cropping systems were replicated 4 times in a randomized complete block design. Our tile drains were installed to a depth of approximately 1.1 meters and were perforated only underneath the plot of interest, whereas all other areas were not perforated, and then flowed to the sampling sump to where it was then monitored for its water flow at 5-minute intervals, and then also had water samples obtained for chemical analysis. At the site, we also monitored soil moisture contents using Echo TE probes at various depths from 5 to 50 centimeters, measured every 30 minutes throughout the year. So to get into some of the data, And I'd like to first point out, we've observed data on these both for 2009 and for 2010 so far, but the observation periods are different. For 2009, we started monitoring in the middle of June, extending through November, and then for this year, for the data that I'm presenting, it's from March up until the middle of August. So those observation lengths and periods are different. For 2009, the precipitation amount was 10.6 inches, whereas in 2010, we observed 39 inches of precipitation. If we look at how much of that precipitation input then occurred in the tile drainage, was observed in the tile drainage, we can point out some general trends observing. With the first two values for each year for the traditional corn and soybean rotations being the highest in values, followed by somewhat lower values for the continuous corn systems, and then the lowest values for the both prairie systems. Now these tile drainage quantities for the prairies, they make up about 25% of that water input through precipitation, whereas the row crops make up probably about 50% on average. Now this was to be expected due to other studies in the Midwest region, as observed before, but it leaves anywhere from 75% to 50% unaccounted for, in which we assume that most of it is going to evapotranspiration. We hope to do some measurements of this in the future, but our changes in water storage was negligible on this scale, typically being below 0.01 change in inches of water. And so, as we have seen from Dr. Cruz's presentation, evapotranspiration in some studies observed for perennials is somewhat similar to that of the corn or row crop systems. And studies have shown that usually occupy somewhere between 40 to 55%. Now, that fits in well with our row crop data, but it still leaves 20-some percent unaccounted for in our prairie systems due to the site being relatively flat, we assume negligible runoff. But in early stages of these prairie systems, we believe most of that is going to evapotranspiration, particularly because we have observed similar bulk densities among these in the soil surface. However, our hydraulic conductivities are much lower for the prairies. With that said, our root data is also showing that there's about 12 times the density of roots in the top 5 centimeters in the prairies versus that of the corn. So we believe that some of that water may be just being captured in that thatch layer, not allowed to infiltrate and then evaporate shortly afterwards. If we look at the tile drainage data over time during the observation periods, with time on the x-axis, drainage volume on the first y-axis, and daily rainfall on the second y-axis, and represented by the black bars, and please note that these are on different scales. We can see some general trends with early in the season when rainfall isn't as frequent. We don't see separation in these tile drainage events among cropping systems as much as we do later on when we observed higher frequency and intensities of precipitation events. And if we look at some of the soil moisture data, going back, also giving evidence to the evapotranspiration portion that I was talking about, for the prairie compared to the row crop systems in that top portion of the soil profile, we observe lower water contents even after precipitation events. However, lower in the soil profile, we observe more consistent trends and larger changes for the row crops in those systems, and also giving further support for needing to do some flow dynamics evaluation of these tile drains, which I'll talk about here in a little bit. So getting into some of the water quality aspects of it, first focusing on the nitrate data, and these two graphs here are the same ones that you've seen before for the total drainage with time. When we look at the concentrations of nitrate, we see similar trends among both years with the corn soybean concentrations, the traditional corn soybean rotations, having the highest nitrate concentrations in that water, tile drainage water, followed shortly behind with the continuous corn crops. However, it is interesting to note that for the green line there, which represents that the continuous corn with winter cover crop, does have lower nitrate concentrations at various points throughout the year. However, the prairie systems are nearly hardly any nitrate at all, even for the fertilized system, which is very important in this evaluation here, because we would have expected to see higher nitrate concentrations when we started adding that nitrogen to the system. However, we did not observe that. So if we look at it in the flow-weighted means version, we see the same trends with the row crops, traditional row crops with the highest amount, followed somewhat lower by the continuous corn ones, and then the prairie systems with the least. We look at similar graphs for that of the phosphate. We don't see nearly as clear trends here. We do see in 2010 some of the row crop systems at times do have higher phosphate concentrations, but generally we don't observe any clear trend. And same way with when we look at it in a flow weighted means version, as the 2 years are inconsistent and the variability in between the reps will likely make these non-significant. So it seems that these systems affect the nitrate levels in tile drainage more so than they affect the phosphate concentrations. So those total amounts are important ways of evaluating these systems if we're looking at a water quality evaluation of which cropping system do we go with. However, another way of looking at it is looking at some of these flow dynamics, time lags and flow intensities, concentration intensities, because even though a system can have similar total outputs, where it's distributed with its flow intensity and concentrations can also have great impacts on the environment. If you lump everything together in a short period of time versus span it out over the event, it's likely to have implications for choices. For instance, we might expect, for corn, we might expect some typical hydrograph with flow intensity over time, whereas for prairie, we might observe some other trend. And we plan on doing this with the data we haven't yet, but what we want to do is look and see when those flow intensities are occurring, and then look at differences in between peak intensities and then also lag times for both the flow, water flow, and then also for concentration of nitrates and phosphates coming out of the systems. And then also repeat this analysis for looking at when the precipitation event first occurs and then the tile drainage event begins and then total duration of that tile drainage event. So for the meantime, some of our general conclusions that we can get to is in relative to traditional corn and soybean rotations, the continuous corn systems seem to somewhat reduce nitrate concentrations in loads and quantity of water drainage in these systems, whereas the prairie systems do significantly reduce the nitrate concentrations and loads and the quantity of water and the tile drainage, and at this point seems to be a somewhat more preferable choice for biofuel crop selection when considering water quality. And with that, if there's any time, I'd be happy to take any questions or comments or discussion. However, I think we might need to move on.